I think we are ready to start. Hello, everybody. Hello, welcome to this research seminar by the Hellenic Observatory. The topic of the seminar today is deciphering the formulation of Greek economic diplomacy towards the Western Balkans. We have two very good colleagues who are going to take us to this topic, Ritsa Panagiotou and Nikos Tsifakis. I will introduce the speakers in a minute, but let me start by saying that the work that we will present is based on a research project with the same title, I think, which was conducted under the auspices of the Hellenic Observatory under a scheme of research called Research Calls, which is funded by the AC Laskaridis Foundation and Mr. Vasilis Apostolopoulos. The project, as I'm sure the speakers will tell us, has produced a policy brief and also a research paper, which are both available to the Hellenic Observatory website. So let me introduce the speakers, I think, in the order that they will speak, starting from Ritsa Panagiotou, who is a senior research fellow at the Center for Planning and Economic Research, KEPE, in Athens. Dr. Panagiotou has a BA in political science and Russian from Wellesley College, and an MPhil and DPhil in international relations from Oxford University. She has worked as research associate at the European Business School in Fontainebleau in France, and she has been adjunct professor at the University of at the Athens University of Economics and Business, the University of Athens postgraduate program in Southeast Europe Studies, and elsewhere. She's also been a visiting fellow, visiting research fellow at the European University Institute in Florence. The co-author of the study and our second speaker is Professor Nikos Tsifakis, who is Associate Professor of International Relations at the Department of Political Science and International Relations at the University of Peloponnese. Professor Tsifakis has research interests that include the Balkan politics, EU external relations, and international relations theory. He has published articles in journals such as the Cambridge Review of International Affairs, Conflict, Security and Development, European Foreign Affairs Review, and others. And in 2008, he was awarded, together with Professor Kouliaras, the Marcel Cadieux Distinguished Writing Award by the Canadian International Council. And he very recently co-edited a book together with Florian Bieber on the Western Balkans and the world, linkages and relations with non-Western countries that came out with Routledge in 2010, I believe. Before I pass the floor to the speakers, let me make a couple of housekeeping announcements. So for those of you using Twitter in the audience, the hashtag for today's event is hashtag LSE Greece, one word. The event is being recorded and subject to not having any technical difficulties, it would become available as a podcast from the LSE website. As usual, there will be the opportunity for people in the audience to put your questions, to submit your questions. Please don't wait until the end necessarily. You can submit your questions at any point in time using the Q&A feature at the bottom of your screen. The questions will be submitted to myself, and I will pose the questions and as many of them as possible to the speakers. If you're watching the event live on Facebook, please add your questions as comments, and then they will be picked up from Facebook and passed on to the event on Zoom. So that's all the introductory remarks for me, from my side. So without further ado, I pass the floor, I think, to Ritsa, who's going to take us through the presentation.
Okay, I unmuted myself. Can you hear me? Is it okay? Okay. Thank you very much, Vasili, for this kind introduction. Thank you. I would like to also, before we even start, thank the organizers of the event, the Hellenic Observatory, and to thank the Hellenic Observatory of the London School of Economics for making this research project possible, first of all, and also supporting us so closely and so wonderfully through the whole course of this project, which was a long and not always easy, but quite exciting project that we went. So we thank the LSE Hellenic Observatory for its support and excellent cooperation. I'm just going to be briefly speaking. The time is of the essence. So even though it's a very large project, we're going to try to keep it to limited our discussion so we can have time for discussion. I'm going to be briefly discussing the trigger behind this project, how we came to be interested in doing a project like this. And also the objectives of the study, meaning how we went about, or what we wanted to prove and what we wanted to do in research, the methodology that we followed, and the main challenges and problems that we discovered that face Greek businesses in the region. And then Nikos is going to proceed with policy proposals, conclusions, and other things that I have not covered. So just maybe I'll just start by putting the sharing screen here. So the trigger for this work, yes, Nikos and I have worked together over the years on many research projects relating to Greece and the Balkans, and both political topics, economic topics, Greece's relations with these countries, the powerful economic Greek presence, especially from the mid-1990s onwards, the emergence of Greece as a major trade and investment partner for the countries of the region, and so often. So we've worked a lot together separately. Greece and the Balkans is kind of our thing, I need to say. In our latest work, we focused on more recent trends, right? We studied how economic relations were impacted by especially the economic crisis after 2009 that had a dramatic impact on Greece's relations with the Balkans, weakening of Greece's role politically and economically, and then the impact, there was slight recovery, and then the impact of the events of 2015, the months of negotiation with our creditors, et cetera, the referendum, the bank closures, capital controls, and all that, that had a very dramatic impact as well. So in this context of studying these recent years, we realized that while there was a slow but consistent recovery in trade transactions after 2016, the downward trend, dramatically downward trend, of Greek investment in the Western Balkans that had started all the way back in 2009 had not shown a similar recovery. So we saw that while Greek exports and trade surplus had almost reached pre-crisis levels by 2019, trade flows and stocks were in consistent decline. And for example, between 2014 and 2019, Greek FDI stocks in the Western Balkans fell from 2.6 billion euros to about 638 million euros. I will just show the slide here. Obviously, in the project, all these slides and graphs are analyzed and discussed much, much more. This is just now to give an idea of what we're saying, how in 2015, there was a recovery in exports and the trade surplus. Of course, then we see a fall again due to the pandemic, which is a different issue. And we do mention it a little bit, but we started this project before the pandemic. But in any case, the trend was upward with trade, and that was very interesting to us. And yet on the other side, we saw quite shocking exhibition of a very particular and consistent decline of foreign direct investment stocks, Greek FDI stocks in the Balkans. We see from 2000 forward onwards, it's a consistent decline of Greek investment stock in the region. And this negative trend we noticed, of course, was particularly evident in the banking sector. It was quite shocking, actually, because the collapse of Greek investment led to the closure of many branches and offices. And actually, we have some charts in the report that shows for each bank, its presence in each country, and how it started, and then the branches started decreasing, leading eventually to the withdrawal and the total shutdown and withdrawal of many Greek banks, leaving the banking sector extremely weakened after having been extremely dominating in the region for about a decade. Greek banking was like a point of reference of Greek investment in the region. So as we were observing these developments, we started wondering out loud, so to speak, how do Greek businesses function in this increasingly difficult environment? What are the main problems that they face on the ground, so to speak, and not just the macro that we have figures for trade, imports, exports? How do they face, what problems are they facing on the ground? How are they managing to respond to these multi-layered challenges and difficulties? How is the closure of so many banks impacting their ability to do business? Are they getting support from the Greek state? If so, how is the support mechanism structured? Who are the main actors in the support mechanism? And what is the role of Greek economic diplomacy? So these are all questions that would come out at various times while we were working on our previous project. And this is how it kind of led to the desire to dig a little bit deeper and study the framework within which economic relations are actually conducted and to identify some problems of economic diplomacy and see how we can move forward. So this leads us to a summary here of the objective of the study. Literally, it is to delve into the intricacies of Greek economic diplomacy, focusing on its conduct in the Western Balkan countries, and exploring paths that could potentially improve economic and business practices in the region. So this is the objective. This is what we're trying to do. We try to do this by mapping out the multi-layered dimensions of Greek economic relations with the Western Balkans, highlighting problems and challenges that have emerged over the years, identifying key actors and stakeholders in the process, and making policy recommendations based on an evaluation of all of the above. So as I said, our approach had both macro and micro elements. We looked at the macro environment, trade and investment overall, and then micro because we wanted to analyze on a business level, talk to business people who are involved in the region and get real on the ground information. So the methodology, so very few slides only, our first step was to map out the whole range of economic linkages between Greece and the Western Balkan countries. And as I said before, we focused more on trade and investment, even though of course relations are much more broad, but these are the two main sectors that we focused on. And we gathered quantitative data from official databases, for example, the Hellenic Statistical Authority, ELSTAT, right? The Bank of Greece, especially for data on investment and banks, Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the World Bank, and UN Comtrade database, which is the main source of trade data internationally. So as I said, I'll say that in a second. Yes, the second important point here, the project's main data collection tool for our on-the-ground research, as we said, was a series of semi-structured interviews with the following categories of persons. First, CEOs of large exporters and investors in the region, Greek companies investing or exporting towards the Western Balkans, high-ranking executive officers in business associations and chambers of commerce, representatives of think tanks and other interest groups, and finally, public officers, especially members of diplomatic missions in the Western Balkans, high-ranking officials in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So our idea was to start by talking to the actual business people doing business in Albania, North Macedonia, et cetera, and all these in the Western Balkans. And then to hear about their problems on a day-to-day basis, and then work our way down to the actual high-ranking officials in the state, public officers. So, and then bring to them the questions and the problems that the business people had and see what the response would be in the sense of, well, what we are doing as a state. The interviews took place exclusively via video calls, in part due to the pandemic, of course, but also due to the fact that most of the people that we interviewed, especially in the business environment and the diplomatic missions, of course, reside and work in the Western Balkan countries. So we were on Zoom calls with Tirana, Skopje, Belgrade, and so on and so forth, Pristina and all that. Ultimately, we carried out 50-hour-length interviews. So this is where we got most of our material for the main problems that these businesses face in the region. But on top of the material that we got from the interviews, we also proceeded to triangulate, as we say, so get as much data as we can and overlap and triangulate data obtained from official documents, news articles, many reports by international organizations, research institutes, and Greek diplomatic missions in the Western Balkans. And last but not least, and this was a very difficult and long, and Nikos did this part very painstakingly, going through dozens of Greek laws and presidential decrees regulating Greek economic diplomacy and the nuances of its ongoing multi-stage reform. So that last part was, okay, what already is going on and what is the status quo and how does it overlap with the problems that we see and how can we make some suggestions? So I'll wrap up with the categories that we came across, both from, let's just say, the problems and challenges facing Greek businesses from our experience, both through the secondary research and the interviews, we categorize them roughly into three groups. The first group of problems that Greek business people face while interacting with Western Balkan countries are problems that are inherent to these countries themselves. And to in varying degrees, some countries have more of a problem with corruption, others have more of a problem with the rule of law, etc. But most of these problems we found across the board, no matter which country we're dealing with. So there are problems such as state capture, deterioration in the rule of law, inefficient judicial procedures, political instability, corruption, lack of transparency, protectionism, bureaucracy, democratic backsliding, very important, and uneven competition in public procurement and imports. We had a lot of business people telling us that it's not even a fair, they don't even go after public competitions because they know that a local company will get it and so on. The second category of problems is due to the difficulties in bilateral relations between Greece and these countries. So for example, everybody can guess what we're talking about here, diplomatic non-recognition of Kosovo. How can a business person have a harmonious business transaction with a country that we have not officially recognized? And there's no legal framework for economic transactions. And the other major bilateral issue was, of course, the name issue with North Macedonia, which meant that there was a lack of a proper legal framework. So business is going on with North Macedonia, even before the PESPA agreement. There was a lot of business between Greece and North Macedonia, but there was a hole in the legal framework. So these tensions, bilateral tensions, were problematic. And then the third category, and this is what we try to focus on even more, because this is something that we can make some proposals. We can't say to Albania, deal with corruption, but we can make proposals for the Greek side. And these are the problems that are linked to the lack of an efficient state economic diplomacy that is there to support, facilitate, and protect Greek business initiatives in the region. This is something that we heard quite a bit from Greek businessmen, that they don't feel supported, they don't feel protected. They feel that there's an incomplete legal framework, for example, for the regulation of relations. For example, there's a lack of agreements for the avoidance of double taxation. In some cases, there's a burdensome bureaucracy from the Greek side, not just from the Western Balkan side. There's unclear legislation, yet again. For example, on the right of entry with a car having foreign license plates, we heard from some businessmen, for example, from Serbia, that they had problems at the border because their car had Serbian license plates. And they said, shouldn't something be done to allow us as Greeks doing business in Serbia to enter and leave the country without being harassed and having to leave our car at the border, for example. And finally, a weak cooperation between Greek public and private actors in Greece and abroad. This is also an important problem that we notice that in many cases, and Nikos will develop this more, everybody's doing their own thing. They don't know what the other people are doing, and they're not really properly cooperating and collaborating in order to make everything a little bit more efficient. I will end here my presentation. I don't know if I went over the time or if I'm within my time. And I'll pass now, Nikos will continue with his discussion on the policy proposals and conclusions.
Thanks. I would like also, thank you, Ritsa. Could you please change the slide there? I would like also my turn to thank LSE, the Hellenic Observatory, for its constant support and encouragement at all stages of the process, And also the countless of people to who have talked during this research, for people who have interviewed, and also people who have given us access to documents, to ideas, to details. Without all this support, this project would have not been the same. What I'm going to do in the next 10 minutes quarter is I'm going very briefly, and this is just one slide, explaining you that at the same moment that we are doing this research, since 2019, there is a process going on in Greece of reforming, restructuring the Greek economic diplomacy. So I very briefly present this process, which I'm saying from now that is not incomplete, so it, I cannot assess it, but I should take into consideration these changes. And then I'll pass, as it's said, directly to policy recommendation. So the Greek state has started in 2019 a process of reforming its economic diplomacy apparatus. First of all, it has adopted a new organism, which implies that it has administratively restructured its directions, and economic diplomacy has been fully assigned to the General Secretariat for International Economic Relations and Extroversion. At the same moment, the Director General for International Development Cooperation, which has been for many years inactive, is reactivated, and its budget is planned to progressively reach 0.3% of the country's GDP. Enterprise Greece, an organization whose mission is to provide assistance to foreign investors and promote Greek exports abroad, came under the supervision of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and it is also at the present undergoing a major process of internal restructuring. In addition, the General Secretary of International Economic Relations and Extroversion has been double-hatted as President of Enterprise Greece to maximize cohesion in economic diplomacy. Also, a Council of Extroversion was established to consult the Advisory Board of Enterprise Greece, and is composed of people ranging from representatives of state agencies to representatives of the Union of Hellenic Chambers of Commerce and large business associations. This Council of Extroversion had just convened for the first time in December 2021. And finally, the Export Credit Insurance Organization came also under the supervision of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and at this moment it is also undergoing a process of restructuring. So we're seeing that there are many structural changes taking place. They have not been completed. They may take a year, and this, and their results, we may see them in a couple of years or so. But we're taking note of all these changes that take place in order to articulate some policy recommendations. So where we're thinking we should concentrate? The first thing that needs economic diplomacy, to the extent that it concerns a plurality of public and private actors who have a presence and interest in the region, we need at multiple levels a continuous networking and coordination. The first level is interstate cooperation. We need a greater effort at the intergovernmental level. Regular visits by Greek government officials empower the Greek diplomatic missions in these countries. However, the frequent tours in the region of the leadership of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs is not enough. We also need more contacts and follow-up visits between ministers with different portfolios, such as energy, transport, tourism, and culture, to advance cooperation in specific fields of activity. There are also three areas of concern where Greece should enhance its cooperation with its northern neighbors. The first is, as Rich already mentioned, Greece has not concluded agreements for the avoidance of double taxation with North Macedonia, Montenegro, and Kosovo, whose independence it has not recognized. Paradoxically, the position of Greek investors in North Macedonia has deteriorated since the signing of the PESPA agreement. This is because while the investment risk in the country has diminished, Greek investors are in disadvantaged position due to overtaxation. The second element is that Athens should raise more consistently all problems that Greek businesses face in the region. I'll give one example. Greek chambers of commerce are interested in establishing a direct channel of communication with the custom authorities of Western Balkan countries that can help them immediately resolve problems. And the third element is connectivity. There is much talk in the EU and much funds directed to that end, to the improvement of the region's transport infrastructure. Athens also can improve its own connectivity to the region if there was a way, or the state subject to private initiatives, but we should mention it, that there was an establishment of regular direct flight connections between Athens and all capitals in the region. Another level of cooperation is between the Greek public and private actors. We also need the establishment of a structured process of regular consultations between the state and the business community. These consultations should be systematic and take place at different stages of policy making and across different sectors of economic activity. The newly established Council of Extroversion could assume a central role with more responsibilities and a greater spectrum of activities, for example, with the inclusion of tourism and the Greek investments abroad. Also, the state should stop treating Greek investors in the region with suspicion, often considering them as tax evaders who do not care about generating employment in Greece. The legislation concerning the right of Greek people to enter the country with cars having foreign license plates should be unambiguous and leave no room for divergent interpretations among custom officers in different crossing points. The activities of Greek companies impact not only on their corporate brand names, but also on the image of their country of origin. The Greek state could consider establishing a distinct corporate social responsibility division in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs that could support responsible corporate practices. Also, diplomatic missions in the Western Balkans can be linked more closely with the business community in Athens. For instance, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs could organize information activities with the participation of those diplomatic officers and Greek representatives, business representatives in Greece. And another proposition is that Greek companies intending to bid for EU finance projects in the Western Balkan countries, they should better inform the diplomatic positions, the diplomatic missions in place, as there is an EU informal norm of making sure that companies from all interested EU members get a market share. If you can change, sorry, Ritsa, thank you. Okay, now some more specific ideas concerning exports and also concerning investments. With respect to exports, we need more synergies and an improved coordination among private actors and among public and private actors. We're having two examples here. The one is that Greek small producers would increase the value of their products and their profits if they join forces in associations that would have the necessary means to receive professional assistance in processing and marketing. In terms of logistics, the Offices of Economic and Commercial Affairs, in collaboration with chambers and the main international transport companies, could create and monitor some sort of track schedule to take advantage of return cargoes that diminish the transport cost and decrease efficiency. With respect to foreign investments, Hellenic Business Association in Albania, North Macedonia and Serbia should strengthen their links with the business community in Greece as well as among themselves. The expansion and fostering of coordination among Hellenic Business Association in the Balkans will help them exchange information and best practices that will improve their efficiency. There is also a need for coordination with actors in third countries. Greek actors should also reach out to their counterparts from other countries to join forces and increase policy efficiency. For example, the Greek diplomatic officers should always engage EU institutions and other EU member states when Greek companies face challenges in the Western Balkans relating to the operation of the rule of law or to obligations deriving from those countries' stabilization association agreements. Also, Greek corporations should network intensively and seek for membership in all kinds of business associations in the region, from sectoral ones such as the Association of Banks to large associations and chambers such as the American Chambers of Commerce and the Foreign Investors Council. At the same moment, Greek Chambers of Commerce should regularly attend meetings of international associations of chambers to coordinate activities with their counterparts from other countries with which they share the same concerns. And finally, our last batch of policy recommendation concern the Greek diplomacy itself. The expansion of Greece's economic relations with Western Balkan countries requires the production of a greater number of sectoral studies with specific fields of activity per country in order to inform producers and prospective investors and help them get adequately prepared. The diplomatic missions in the region, in that case, should be more closely linked with enterprise Greece. While diplomatic missions have the advantage of field presence and familiarity with diplomacy, enterprise Greece has greater resources and more specialized knowledge of the features of Greek export-oriented companies. Assigning a reporting role to enterprise Greece may also help economic counselors to dedicate greater time on other aspects of their work, such as networking, where many Greek businesses expect greater support. The output of diplomatic missions varies across time and space and is largely dependent on the performance of people dispatched in these locations. Diplomatic officers should receive very clear directions with specific targets and expected output measured in terms of key performance indicators. The annual reports of offices of economic and commercial affairs could be more reader-friendly to a wider non-specialized audience. The guidance of deployed officers should become more systematic and commands in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs at the very moment of their assignment to a new post. Moreover, the conduct of diplomacy and problem solving should not depend exclusively on the diplomatic officer's own experience and judgment. The ministry may consider developing standard operating procedures to guide diplomatic work abroad. Last but not least, diplomatic missions should be equipped with a more adequate budgets to be able to carry out a variety of activities. I will stop here and I'll be happy to continue with more info on the Q&A session. Thank you again.
Thank you very much, Nico, and thank you very much, Ritza, for your presentations. We are waiting for the questions to come in the Q&A, but let me kick off with some thoughts and questions that I have based on what you were saying. Obviously, the focus is very much on you know, what Greece can do, or what the Greek state and obviously businesses, you mentioned small business associations and so forth, what they can do. But on the other hand, there's also the, you know, it's not only the supply side, if you want, of this, but also the demand side. And so this may be a very long question, but bear with me. So definitely in the 90s and maybe early 2000s, the Balkans were not a particularly attractive region, definitely for foreign direct investment, but in some regards also with trade relations. So then there was definitely the, if you want, the need or the space for Greece to play an important role. And we know the banking system, telecommunications, and so forth were very important in direct investment into the region. I wonder whether, I mean, the situation has changed a lot, both institutionally, a lot of institutional development in the Balkans more recently, but also in economic terms, economic development, and also more investment coming from Western Europe, so from the traditional big countries of the European Union. So I wonder whether you have a measure of, not a quantitative measure, but, you know, a sense of how much, you know, is it about improving, making the, you know, along the lines of the policy recommendation that you made. So for Greece to improve, it is its efficiency, its cooperation, technology, so to speak, and all the, you know, very interesting recommendations that you made, versus that, if you want, the region has moved on in some regards, and it can never be that kind of natural place for foreign direct investments by Greece, and also for trade relations to the extent that it was definitely in the 90s and before the Eurozone crisis. So if, you know, if you want, if it's a, maybe the supply side from Greece can improve with the reforms also that you mentioned, but it is in a way too late because the demand is not there anymore.
I don't know if this is an answer exactly, or just some comments, because as we see in the project itself, we have a brief historical background to the economic history of Greece's involvement in the region. Even though it's not our main focus, we needed to set the stage, you know, where it all began, and we have it broken down into mid-90s until 2009, and then post-crisis. And the 90s onwards was definitely, I think by all admission, a time of El Dorado for the Greek business in the region. I think everybody who studies Greece and the Balkans accepts this. This was a time where there, just after the war in Bosnia, not many other countries were interested in moving into the Balkans because they were more interested in the stars of the Visegrad, Poland, Hungary, etc. So Greece was uniquely placed at this time from the mid-90s onwards. And playing the card of the only EU member in the Balkans, the only NATO member in the Balkans, we know this narrative. The Balkan legitimacy, so to speak, and kind of we're more aware of how things work. So they filled in this void that other countries at the time were not willing really to move in. And that's why for many years, Greece was number one investor in many countries, number one trade partner, always in the top three for trade and investment, always in the top three. The bankings were ruling a very, very a strong presence of Alpha Bank, Ethniki, National Bank, Eurobank, etc. And then the crisis of 2009 had almost shocking impact. Shocking. And it's in the project, we see all the, there are many charts that show the overall trade, bilateral trade. You see how some countries were more impacted. For example, trade with Albania was more impacted. Investment was more impacted in certain countries. So I think 2009 was obviously a major turning point, and the numbers show it. This isn't just me saying something wise, obviously. And then the problem, and this is what we found so interesting, there was a little bit of a recovery. For 2-3 years, it was flat. Then there was a little bit of a recovery. And then just as we were emerging, as the charts show, we had the 2015 crisis. From the first months of the negotiation with all the instability, and then the everything broke loose with the referendum, capital controls. Almost everyone we spoke to talked about 2015 as a disastrous turning point, especially for investment in banking, because banks were given the directive to disinvest, to come back to Greece, to not support their subsidiaries. And at this time, to come back to your point, other countries were even more aggressively moving in. And you have countries like Austria, Italy, being top investors, and Greece moving more and more down the scale and ranking of importance as a trade partner, as a, and as an investment partner. Now, I don't know if it's irreversible. I somehow feel that Greece can never again be the number one investor and trade partner. I think that ship has sailed. But I think that when we get past this pandemic, and if we survive what's going on now in the world, that we do have the potential to rebuild our presence. This is what I get from the reading and everything. But I don't think that we're going to be number one again, the number one, the power that everyone looked to in the region. And we also lost, as we wrote in another article with Nico, we lost a lot of political capital during the whole crisis. Respect, presence, gravitas. Greece was really almost a pariah, even to our Western Balkan neighbors, which is quite shocking. Anyway, I think Nikos can say something as well here. I don't want to.
Thanks, Ritsa. You have covered me a lot. I'll just add a few comments. First of all, that now we have a totally new landscape, and this is marked by the entry of new countries, new actors. There's a greater interest in the region by China, by the Emirates, by Turkey. Turkey is much more a systematic economic actor in the region, by Russia. So this is a region now with a more intense competition. And I agree with Richard, this is not the question. We have no fatigue with being the first or the second investor or the first trader with the region. The question is whether a country can stand on its feet in its extended international economic relations. So I'll give two very brief examples. If you have a small Greek company that you aspire to become an export company, the ideal place to command the Western Balkans. This is because the Greek products are high quality products. in comparison with Balkan products. And if you cannot survive in a so proximate markets with so small distances and with proximate mentalities, there is no way that you can survive in the German market. So it is it should be a testing ground. It should be the first step for many companies that want to try their luck to become more extrovert. If we turn now to FDIs, for many companies, the presence in the region is a line of defense, is a buffer zone before the Greek market. If they no longer have external presence, their presence increase also will be diminished. So this is not a question about hegemonic expansion. It's also about protecting their place in Greece by having part of their work abroad. We're at the point where, for example, there will be no more Greek back in Albania, which is a major development. Why do we need Greek back in the banks in the region? Because they provide, in the past, they were providing easily credits. They were helping the Greek companies, and it was an assistance. Even where the Greek banks have remained in North Macedonia and Serbia, they have a smaller share of the economy. So it's much more about that's why Ritza started with this trigger question about keeping your place and trying to grow out of it, than restoring an illusion of hegemony that was never in place. It was much more, as both of you mentioned, a disinterest of other major players in the region that have helped Greece to acquire such a position.
Yeah.
Yes, if I could just add on very quickly to what Nico said, because when I said now other powers are coming in and Italy, Germany, et cetera, of course, and Nikos picked it up very importantly, the big powers that are coming in are Russia and China. The amount of investments that Russia and China have made in the region, China especially, but Russia very much in the energy sector and the tourist sector of Montenegro, and generally a very strong presence in Serbia and the Republika Srpska of Bosnia, it's cause for concern on other levels as well, not just what is the role of Greece. It's cause for other concerns about the whole geopolitical balance in the Western Balkans. And that's something that is also extremely important. And I think the whole landscape has changed, just like Nico said. It used to be Greece coming in almost like the hero in the region. And now not only has our role diminished, we have these big mega partners coming in like Russia and China. Yeah, just wanted to add to what Nikos had just said.
Yeah. No, absolutely. That was a point. I'm going to open to questions from the audience, and please keep the questions coming. But just to follow up on this point, I was actually just teaching before the seminar a group of students at the LSE in my course on the Balkans. So we're talking about economic integration and some of the things we covered there as well. But it is, I mean, you know, definitely the what we call external actors, and who knows how the situation, you know, Russia is going to be looking after whenever the Ukraine crisis, the invasion is resolved. But there's also processes that happen within the region, and I mean, you know, when Greece was, you know, the Eldorado years that Richard, you mentioned, there was practically no trade collaboration. You know, there were not even the bilateral trade agreements within the Balkans. Now we have a process. I mean, obviously CEFTA has progressed a lot over the years, but with the process of the regional economic area, there's cooperation in procurement. So actually, almost, I don't want to say that this is exactly accurate, but it could be that, I mean, definitely a Montenegrin company can bid for a Serbian procurement much better than even institutionally, forget language and other kind of cultural links than a Greek company. So there's so much institutional thickening that is happening in the Balkans. But then perhaps, you know, that makes it particularly difficult for, you know, what is essentially a low economic base, you know, in Greece compared to a German investor, or to come and be competitive there. So I'm asking also not only the external actors, and obviously the influence, you know, as you say, also the Turkish investments and from the Emirates and so forth, but also the institutional thickening in terms of economic integration and economic, so creation of single market in the Balkans, whether that creates a completely different situation that it makes it, you know, no matter how much policy tries, from the side of the Greek state, in a way, you know, half of the door is closed anyway.
If I can add, Vasily, you mentioned the example of Serbia public procurement. According to the 2020 Commission's report that we had consulted until we submit this paper, only 2% of public competitions in Serbia goes to foreign companies. So the problem in the region is that there is much protectionism. And this is all over the region. So Greeks, as German, as any other companies, are disadvantaged. It is an uneven playing field. And what Greek companies told us in the region, they are mainly bidding for contracts either through partnership with local companies. There is a local company that participates in the public procurement competition, or they do not at all, they disregard these competitions. They are looking only for the European Investment Bank, EBRD finance projects, where there are more transparent rules and whether there is predictability in the execution of contracts. So there is a share of the market that is from which Greek companies are excluded, as any other EU company. And this has to do with, as you mentioned, there is a thickening of the institutional framework, but at the same moment, there is a backsliding in the region with a worsening of many rule of law indicators, and the competition is one of them.
Yes, the EU report that we referred to as well, exactly, both the transition report and the stabilization and accession process report, shows a very, very crucial backsliding on almost all indicators of democratic backsliding. We have more state capture, less rule of law, and this is, and most of the people we spoke to highlighted this as an on-the-ground problem as well. And remember, Nico, some of the things that, you know, they know that if they had their day in court, it would never go in their favor. So these are very serious constraints for Greek businesses in the region. And it's a constraint for these countries on the whole, and it impacts their whole accession process as well. Even if you take Greece out of the equation, it's a very problematic period for this region in terms of democratic backsliding. Yeah.
I'm sure we're going to come back to these issues, but and also because also, you know, one of the three points you mentioned about the problems was problems of the Western Balkans, but then you didn't spend too much time talking about this. There's quite a few of those in the Western Balkans. But let me bring a question from the audience. Ozgur Uway is raising a point, and I don't know if I understand the question well, but let me read out the question. I'll try to qualify it. When we look at the recent history, this has always been the leading country of all the Balkans, as we discussed also, such as EU membership, NATO membership, strong economy before the crisis, in the political and economic field. But Athens could not show its expected power in diplomatic and public diplomacy. I wonder if public diplomacy can increase Greece's visibility in the region. This can both contribute to the economic relations with the countries of the region and improve the bilateral relations. So I take the question to mean more that, you know, beyond economic diplomacy, where public diplomacy more broadly is something that can improve the image. I think, Ritsa, you mentioned that Greece became some sort of pariah with the crisis in the Balkans.
Yes, I say two words, but this is more Nikos' thing. Nikos has been working a lot more about diplomacy than I have. I can just say that we saw in all the work that we've been doing these past years, and whenever we see the post-crisis period, 2009, the whole process that Greece went through with the bailouts and the austerity and the total social and political turmoil of the country, it totally, I wouldn't say destroyed, but traumatized the image that Greece had as a pillar of economic and political stability in the region. Because we had the rise of Golden Dawn, for example, we had demonstrations, we had so many problems with our austerity. So this image that we had as a stable country was, that's what I mean when I say about how we lost this image of, I keep saying the same words, a pillar of political and economic stability. And that was, I think, directly the impact of the crisis. So the crisis had an economic dimension, that there was less trade, less investment, et cetera. And even more so when the case came with the capital controls and the closures of the banks and all that. But also our political image deteriorated dramatically. And this is something that Nico has been can speak to much more. And our bilateral relations were not being solved. And so Nico, I'll let you continue this.
Yeah, very briefly. I mean, can Greece, will it be beneficial if we have again a development aid program that can send direct more money to the region and help? Of course, it goes without saying that any external assistance going to the region will be beneficial. But I'm going to give a contrast between two countries towards Serbia and to make a point. In terms of population, in terms of people, there is clearly an affinity between the Serb people and the Greek people. The Greek people are well viewed in Serbia, as opposed to, we might expect that there are some suspicions or less affinity towards Turkey, between Serbia and Turkey. At the same moment, if we see economic relations, Serbia makes much more deals and has a greater presence in Serbia than Greece, because going beyond the affinity at the level of the society, we need more institutional links, we need more visits, we need more propositions, more deals. So the public diplomacy is helpful. It is necessary. We need to do more than this. And this is, I think it's great news that the Greek Development Agency is reactivated, but there is generally a neglect in the region. If we speak geopolitically, it is very natural that the Greek Ministry of Foreign Affairs has during the last years oriented towards all neighboring countries of Turkey. Most of them are in the Eastern Mediterranean and the Middle East. But at the same moment, there is some kind of neglect in the Balkans. That's why we mentioned contacts between other ministries, as in comparison with other countries, and I mentioned precisely Turkey. And we just have need to see how many times during the last year President Vucic or President Rama met President Erdogan, and how many times the Greek leadership has met their counterpart from these countries.
Yeah, thanks to both. I'll bring another question from Tika Vera in the Vera Tika in the audience, who's in Pandion University. The question is there a sector through which this can focus on transforming itself in an important economic pattern in the Balkans? So, is there, I mean, you know, obviously we knew that the banking sector was the vehicle for that, and then the speculative manufacturing, small manufacturing in the 90s, but is there a particular sector that can drive the re-engagement, let's say, of the Greek business sector to the Balkans?
I think that we don't need one sector across the board. In each country, there is a different market. For instance, reading the reports of the diplomatic missions in the region and speaking with businessmen, in Kosovo, there are opportunities in the energy sector. In Albania, there are opportunities for companies in the health sector. So we need much more to pass from this structural picture and to see in its market, in its economy, the needs and the companies that have the capabilities to orient themselves to these markets.
Hmm. Thank you. So, Ritsa, you wanted to say something else?
No, I was going to agree with Nikos exactly about that each country seems to have its niche. That Greece, I mean, it's easy to say, oh, manufacturers is the number one product, because in the report, in the economics chapter, we have under the bilateral, what are the main products and commodities traded, imported and exported between Greece and Albania, Greece and Bosnia, Herzegovina, Serbia, etc. But that's just a macro image. Yes, that manufacturers and electric products and petroleum products and things like that, plastics and all that. I think what Nico says is more correct, that there's so much potential in certain niches, like education, health, like Igia in Tirana, right, Igia Hospital. But we have things opening and closing, unfortunately. So there's so many parameters other than just what Greece can do. You know, when we're starting to emerge from the crisis, we had the pandemic. And everything just started collapsing again. I mean, the figures again were shocking, and we see it on the graph. It went up, up, up until 2019, and then down again. And then Greek GDP growth also contracted. But then during 2021, we have a return to growth in Greece that we hope will drive the economic rebirth, let's say, of Greece's presence in the region. But it has to be niche by niche for each country, country by country.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's a hysteresis element from, you know, when the economy picks up until businesses can recuperate losses and then move into bigger projects. Can I ask, Nico, you mentioned the kind of development economic relations and economic diplomacy with the Eastern Mediterranean countries. So do we have a sense that because again, in the 90s, early 2000s, the Balkans presented the opportunity to Greece. So, and then the only other big investment was in Turkey with Ethniki Trapeza. But is there a sense now that businesses do not see the Western Balkans as the obvious option, and it is just simply one of any possible set of options? You know, why Balkans and not Egypt or you know, the Eastern Mediterranean?
Well, we have been told by, for example, by exporters that they have been tired of trying the Balkan markets. They are small markets with small competition. And then those that they feel competitive enough, think of China, think of the Middle East, they tell us about the Emirates. So more confident companies that have an export capacity think further. The cost of transport has diminished, and they prefer to open to a larger market. But I go back to my original comment that this is not that the Western Balkans have the advantage for Greek companies that do not have this experience, this export experience, that they're going to take the first steps. And it is, despite the difficulties, it might be an ideal landscape to start before going to other markets where there are more prospects. These are small populations, they have a small purchasing capability. So you cannot build all your, if you're a large company, all your plan on expanding the Balkans only.
Yeah, and we've seen that actually with some important investments going, you know, to the US, and so really north investments, you know, going to Western countries rather than kind of countries with lower levels of economic development or technical sophistication, I guess.
It depends on the size of the sorry, Vasily.
Yeah, of course.
The size of the company. Like Nico said, there were some that just said, we're sick and tired of trying. There's too much corruption. There's too much bureaucracy. There's too much red tape. We just can't deal anymore with the Balkans. So we go further away. But there are other smaller companies that we spoke to who, exactly like Nico said, use it as a launching board. You know, let's get our teeth, you know, work our teeth a little bit and then move on to more demanding and competitive markets. Because you're not going to just from, you know, export to Austria, for example, an example there. So they use the smaller Balkan market as a launching pad and then move on to farther away. And as Nico said, the transportation costs at some point had diminished. I don't know what's going to be happening now. Mm-hmm. That's another parameter that is, yeah. But we did hear that quite a bit, that they were quite tired, the smaller ones, because obviously we interviewed people from very large companies as well, companies that had establishments in each of the Western Balkan countries. They had plants or factories in every single one. And then there were smaller exporters that just exported fruit and vegetables, not quite, but I mean, trofima, how do we say food? I mean, yeah, food and beverage, yes. And they're going to start with the Balkan market, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, well, talking about corruption and problems of this sort. So we have a question by Dimitris Sotiropoulos from the University of Athens. Many Western Balkan countries suffer from policy capture by oligarchs, Dimitris' assertion of that. Not all of them to the same degree, of course. Are some Balkan countries more transparent and more open to foreign entrepreneurs? Are there particular Balkan countries in which Greek businessmen and businesswomen would meet less resistance from national level oligarchs, or let's say captured state interest?
I'll try, Rich, and you can follow up. I think that the same problems are throughout the region, and I think Dimitri for raising that issue. But I think if we were to rank the countries, the least problems are in North Macedonia. I mean, the most protectionist regime seems to be Serbia. The Greek business presence is very small in Montenegro and Bosnia, and also the infrastructure does not help to arrive to these countries. Kosovo, there are many problems due to its contested statehood and the non-recognition from Greece. And Albania is a problem that has the greatest problem of corruption. So it seems that from all these countries, if we were to say where the things are better for Greek businessmen, it's North Macedonia.
Okay.
Yes, I think that, thank you, Dimitri, for that question. Yes, I would follow up and agree, first of all, with Nico, from what we gathered from the interviews. And also, I think the EU reports show the same, that North Macedonia has made more progress towards stamping down a little bit, clamping down on corruption and all that. Interestingly, we heard about in Kosovo that even though we don't have a very good image of Kosovo, that it has a very vibrant civil society where business people are more, they felt more welcome. And this was the impression we got from diplomatic attaché in Kosovo, which was very interesting. Of course, we don't have an actual embassy there, but I would also add to what Nico said, yes, some countries have more of a problem with corruption, others more with protectionism, others more with state capture and all that. And we also saw a difference in the sectors. For example, a sector that seems to be very problematic is construction, right, Nico, if I'm not mistaken. Construction seems to have more corruption when it comes to the public procurement competitions. And some of our companies have had serious problems. Some of our companies in the construction industry, where we have some very powerful companies in the region, and they've had some problems. So I think it depends on the country, and it also depends on the sector, I think. That was my interpretation of it. Now, what was the second part of the question by Dimitris about the oligarchs, in which they would meet less resistance? Yeah, no, I think I don't have anything else, I think, to add to that. But like Nico said, there are countries like Montenegro and Bosnia and Herzegovina where we do not have much of a presence. And in Montenegro, I think it's all Russia at this point, especially in the very prolific tourist industry. So I don't know where, even though we do have some hotels as well there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of institutional problems and also corruption that... you know, are abandoning the region, and also, of course, further afield. So it's not, I think, in a way, you know, like focusing too much on the problems of corruption. I think it is only partly telling the story, because, of course, there is foreign investment there, and as you said, it's also by Greek companies. So some managed to find the ways around. So let me move to another question by Michael Harakopos. I think he's an LSE graduate, but I'm not quite sure. But he congratulates you for the study and the presentation and asks, how about energy and transport connectivity in the Western Balkans? Would you agree that this is a sector where Greece could play an important role in Western Balkan countries in transport and energy connectivity?
I can start again, Rich, and you'll follow up. There are many major Greek corporations that in the energy field, in renewable energy, who are trying to invest in the region. There have been also meetings with the leadership of the region. So there are, the Greek companies can contribute to changing the energy mix in the region and helping the region move towards more renewable sources. Of course, there is the political will in these countries, because that's another question, because during the last years, we have seen investments from, for example, from China on projects that have increased pollution and on outdated facilities. Now, again, on the transport connectivity, if I'm not mistaken, Greece has also taken initiatives during the last months. There is to expand the green lanes in the region and to facilitate the commerce. Connectivity is very important. We mentioned it ourselves. The good news is that much money from the European Economic Investment Plan will go to the region for both of these causes, for energy and connectivity. And I think that Greece, due to its proximity, has to win a lot from upgrading this infrastructure.
Yes, I don't have something significant to add to this. It says connectivity is one of the main pillars of the new enlargement process, the new methodology that Macron put forward a year or so ago, increased connectivity. So Greece will get on board with that. But I don't have anything additional to add to what Nico said, that there are initiatives and Greece is present in the energy sector. But yeah, I don't have, other than the connectivity in a European enlargement framework. Yeah.
Yeah, we have some questions from the audience that I'll bring back in a minute, but I think this connects to another question that I wanted to ask. That so in the presentation there was, you know, the recommendations part, there was this undertone of, you know, like businesses need support and the better coordination and communication with the government or with the authorities and the agencies. And because in a way, as Rita was just saying, you know, there's a lot that comes in you know, digital infrastructure, connectivity, transport infrastructure, and so forth, and energy, with European money, but also it is something that the countries in the region obviously have an interest. And then, of course, there could be business interest and business capacity increase on both sectors, energy and transport. But then, you know, without the state actors to connect this to the money coming from the EU and the potential of the business sector, this obviously can become very problematic and not delivered. So thinking in those terms, I wanted to go back to what you were saying about the reforms. There's a lot of restructuring that is happening to the kind of institutional organization, if you want, structure of economic diplomacy in Greece. And I felt, Nico, that you were a bit more descriptive when you were going through this rather than evaluating a lot. So, I mean, of course, you mentioned things about the development agency and so forth, but do we see these reforms taking us to this idea about, you know, missions and industrial policy and how you connect, you know, you resolve coordination problems for economic development, basically? Do you see something in the reforms of the system, which is, if you want, go beyond just relaunching something that was suffering over the years of the crisis?
Personally, I'm very skeptical of institutional reforms in the Greek state, not because they are negative, they are very positive, those that are taking place at the present, actually, but because we are notorious as a country of changing everything every time a new government comes in place. So a major problem with institutional organization of the Greek state is a lack of continuity. So I'm not only waiting to see the result, but I'm waiting to see also where they will stay in place. But we noticed with Ritsa a change of mentality, which is very interesting. Greek businessmen told us that they feel that they have been told also there's a clear direction from the Greek political, from the foreign affairs political leadership, that economic diplomacy should not be underestimated. Something that we remarked, we wrote in the study, is that for many years, for instance, diplomats, ambassadors, were looking at economic diplomacy as low politics, as irrelevant. That means that the foreign policy is only about the Greek-Turkish rivalry and the Macedonian name dispute, and that's it. So this was a field that has been driven exclusively by the private sector. It was businessmen that on their own decided to make an attempt. They went there, they tried to solve the problems on their own. Sometimes they have received help from more modern thinking Greek diplomats, but the Greek state has neglected this aspect. It seems that there is a change of mentality at this period, beyond this change of structures, and a recognition that economic diplomacy is vital, that the country needs to have an economic relation with other countries. And if we see also on data, Rich is much more qualified than myself, on the positive changes since the crisis in Greece, is that we have a smaller trade deficit, we have an increase of exports, and many more companies are thinking about not providing services domestically, but expanding abroad. So I'm much more optimist about the change of mentality, because the institutional changes, although they are, as I said, in the right direction, they may change with a change of government or a change of minister. And this is something that in Greece we have seen in different policy domains during the last years.
Yeah, good point. Sorry, let's say if you want to say something.
No. Excuse me. I just wanted to add about the change in the diplomacy. One of the constant references that we got during our interviews was the importance of the economic and commercial attaché in these countries, and how we spoke to businessmen that have been there for 20 years. So this is not just people who went in for a quick buck and left. We have long-term investors who told us that over the years they had some excellent cooperation with economic and cultural and commercial attachés in the equivalent in the respective capital cities, and others were non-existent. So we found this very interesting that they kept saying that when a Turkish businessman comes, he goes immediately to the office of the economic and commercial attaché, and then they start going around talking to businessmen and banks, that they have much more of a structure of support for the Turkish businessmen who come to do business in Belgrade, let's say, or Tiran or whatever. And over the years, this is what we got this interesting feedback, that in some cases they find that these economic and cultural and commercial, I keep saying cultural, sorry, attachés were literally just fresh out of the diplomacy school. This is like their first assignment. They don't really know, they don't really care, and they certainly cannot guide and support a businessman that's been there for 20 years. So we felt, and Nikos wrote this in the policy proposal as well, that this is one of the easy things to fix. Make it a minimum training for these people who go to all these offices, not just in the Balkans, obviously, but everywhere. But even we couldn't understand why these offices over the years, I'm not pointing fingers to current attachés, over the years have been so under invested in. And I don't mean money, I mean also interest. These are our neighbor countries. We should be more involved. They should be active and organizing things. And we got the impression that it's very much depending on the specific person. And this is something that could very easily be upgraded. Have a minimal level of training before going. And then you know that as soon as we go there, we're going to start making fairs and seminars and things like that. So this is something that we found interesting. And we found that on the level of diplomacy is one of the easier things to adapt and upgrade.
Interesting points. So I want to bring in two questions. I think I can connect them at some level. So one from Henry Jameson, who's asking, how do you think that sanctions placed on Russia will affect the ability of Greek companies to re-establish in the region? And then Thodoros Hadzipandelis from the Aristotle University in Thessaloniki is asking, what about the political situation in the Balkan countries and the impact of parties in the Balkans? So I guess one is the sanctions in Russia and of course the destabilization with the Russian invasion in Ukraine, but also the political situation in the Balkans and party politics therein.
I'll start with the first question. I mean, we don't know how long the sanctions will stay in place, what will them. So all this is wild guessing. But if we take the experience of 2014 of the previous sanctions on Russian companies, strangely, I mean, Serbia, that has not observed sanctions, has become an attractive place, it's not only for Greek, but for companies from other European countries to try to deroute trade with Russia. So staying Serbia out of the sanctions, if sanctions stay in place for some time, might increase the investment interest in Serbia, again, not only from Greek, from Italian, French, German companies that want to find a way to reach the Russian market. This on the assumption that the sanctions will stay and that Serbia will stay out of the sanctions. So the only repercussion I can see in the region is that there is an increased interest for Serbia that will not abide by these sanctions. Now, if I understand well, the second question, and please, I would like to ask Professor Hatzpandelis to correct me, is whether a change of government will change Greece's relation with these countries, if that's what I'm understanding. If that is the question, our only fear or concern might be only with North Macedonia, where we know that the Prespa agreement has painfully been ratified in our neighboring country, and where the leader of the main opposition party has said very clearly that he has made it clear that he will not observe it, or he has said that he will, let's say, implement the agreement, but he won't call his own country North Macedonia. So a change of government in North Macedonia might be a trouble for bilateral relations. I cannot speculate. We don't know it. Our northern neighbor is already in a transitional period in which the Zaev government is no longer in place. So it is clear the candidate will go to elections at some point, and SDSM has lost much of its popularity. But this is the only concern for Greek foreign policy in terms of change of government in the region.
Thanks. Yeah, I very good questions. I don't have much to add because, again, we're still, like Nico said, in a very unknown territory with the sanctions. We're just hoping that it's just the whole thing is very, very terrifying as the how things are going to evolve, very uncertain. The impact in the energy sector, because Serbia is not yet abiding by with the sanctions, as Nico said, and Serbia gets most of its energy anyway from, Russia is the top energy investor, Lukoil, Gazprom, Zaporozhneft, all these top energy gas and petrol companies are top investors in Serbia. I don't know what is going to, I really can't, and I don't know if this is going to give another, I can't quite evaluate it, to be honest, to be perfectly honest. And now with the political situation, as Nico said, I think the most vulnerable case will be North Macedonia. It's very ironic because Zaev was an ally and a force of stability in North Macedonia, and things will not be looking good if he, if we have the regime change, as Nico said, because the Prespa agreement will probably not be 100% honored as such. Other than that, I mean, the whole region obviously is, we have very much instability in Bosnia-Herzegovina with Republika Srpska, and I'm very worried about these. I will put it more in a geopolitical context, what my concerns are. Regime changes, border changes. Republika Srpska has always been, Dodik has always been very, very close to Putin and has been, Vucic as well, of course, always been moving towards more independence within Bosnia-Herzegovina. I'm more concerned about the geopolitical implications now, what the fallout of the Russian aggression in Ukraine, to be honest. And I think, I don't know if it, I was just thinking a few days ago, if this, even though the countries are obviously not at all ready, when I heard that Ukraine said we ask for EU admission immediately, and of course that's never going to happen, that cannot happen, but I was kind of shocked by the Frechheit, as the Germans would say, you know, the audacity. And yet I thought, well, maybe now the panic will be such that the EU will bundle up, not Ukraine, obviously, but the other countries that have been waiting and waiting, the famous waiting room of the enlargement process. I mean, I've been writing about this for years. Maybe they'll see it as an acute geopolitical importance to accelerate this process. It used to be, let's accelerate because Russia and China are changing the geopolitical balance. Maybe now it will be, let's accelerate because we need these countries before they tip over into more Russian influence. I don't know, this is not an academic evaluation. It's just a feeling I've been getting that things might change now because of this aggression. Obviously, Ukraine is not going to join the EU anytime soon, and I don't know if ever, but these other countries that I've been negotiating since mid-2000s, maybe things will accelerate. I mean, this is a very audacious comment on my part, but I think that things, Europe has been very, very shocked by what is happening. And I think they may want to consolidate a little bit more in the region. I don't know.
If I can just add a short comment just on Ukraine, if that crisis spill over beyond the Ukraine's border, the Western Balkans is one of the regions where we're more afraid. And this is because there's a very strong Russian, not only economic, but political influence. They are holding themselves Bosnia United. They can at any moment really unleash, you know, Dodik and organize a referendum of secession that he's setting for some time in Bosnia. So this is the reason that we are mostly afraid that the crisis can spill over. It is no coincidence that once the EU and the West took the first measures, simultaneously they increased the force of the peacekeeping force in Bosnia, because there's a clear connection. So this is a region that might be linked to the developments in Ukraine.
And then that would have, obviously, you know, it would change completely the type of conversation we have about Greek investments also in the region and so forth. Approaching the end of our discussion, I want to ask a question which is not so geopolitics. It's more, I don't know if it's kind of economic diplomacy theory of some sort. Is there something that is there any difference in what the state has to do in order to support exports by businesses versus foreign direct investment of businesses into the region? So, in other words, is there, do we know also from other cases and other countries as well, whether it is difficult at the same time for the state to pursue both a good export promotion policy and a good FDI policy with selecting sectors, and as you were saying, the attaches, helping businesses and so forth. Is there a tension between the two, or can they connect?
I can very, very quickly then give to Richard the floor. In fact, to clarify this, the state is interested in incoming investments in Greece. Does not have very much outward FDI, and this is something that is changing, but its interest is exports and incoming investments, and this is what Enterprise Greece is doing primarily. The state can help exports, but a major hurdle that we try to highlight is that it has to do with the Greek mentality. Greek producers want to work individually. We have small units, small companies with not the capacity to pay for processing, for marketing, that they cannot guarantee a constant flow of products throughout the year. And the major thing that can do the state, but it has to do with the people, is to create larger players, more players. Greek exports are very much dependent on a very few large players, and then many small who are very vulnerable to every shock.
Ritza?
Not many words of wisdom to add. I just will add something that we found quite interesting with some of our interviewees, that they felt almost that they, as people who were investing abroad or trading, more the investment actually, yes, were often seen with suspicion and bad intent from the Greek state very often. And this is where we came to this, like when this example was coming, driving in from Serbia with a license plate. It was almost like, why are you investing your money abroad? Why aren't you investing in Greece? Why aren't you giving jobs in Greece? You took the easy way out to go invest in Serbia. You're trying to avoid taxes. There's sort of like a negative stigma to a great extent. I don't know, Nico, we had this feeling, it was declared, it wasn't our feeling, almost a stigma. Instead of encouraging this Greek presence in the Balkans, it was very much, you're going there because you want to avoid paying taxes and it's cheaper labor for you and you should be investing here. So this negative, a pariah almost feeling, this does not include the banks, of course, but other businesses, is very discouraging, I think. And this is an attitude that needs to change from the Greek, the head from the export promotion and the Enterprise Greece, which is more interested in attracting investment, but supposedly gives advice for companies that want to invest abroad as well. So this is something that technically is not that difficult to change if they wanted to. The whole perception that somebody who's doing business in Albania is not, a crook or somebody who just doesn't want to pay taxes in Greece. It's somebody who's expanding his or her market. Yeah.
I had looked a bit at some on economic relations, economic diplomacy many, many years ago in the Balkans. So I'm a bit shocked that still the mentality, you would think the mentality of the state officials would be that, these are people who want to avoid paying taxes in Greece or they want to take their businesses elsewhere. I'm afraid we have to wrap up the seminar, stop here. Thank you very much, Ritza Panagiotou and Nico Tsifaki, for your very interesting presentation and the extensive discussion. Thanks also to the people in the audience for the questions and also for attending. We have put on the chat the link to the study. So a couple of people asked for where they can find the report, the policy report and the paper. So the link to the study will take them there. Otherwise, you can always contact the Hellenic Observatory.
Thank you very much.
Before I close, can I make two announcements? One, that the video of the event will be available on the website of the Hellenic Observatory and also on our YouTube channel, which you can Google, you know, to find where exactly it is. Our next listed seminar is on Wednesday, 30th of March, so at the other end of the month, at 4 o'clock UK time, 6 o'clock Greek time. We have a very, very interesting event, again, in relation to Southeast Europe. The title is Weathering the Pandemic, the Emerging Financial Landscape in Southeast Europe. And I'm sure we're going to have a lot to say following the developments also in Ukraine and with everything else. Our speakers are Fokion Karavias, Chief Executive Officer of Eurobank, Francis Malidze, Managing Director from the Financial Institutions for the EBRD, Deborah Revoltella, the Chief Economist of the European Investment Bank, and Boris Vujicic, the Governor of the Croatian National Bank. The moderator of the event is Antoni Baldzokas, who is a visiting professor in practice here at the Hellenic Observatory. 30th of March, our next event. I hope as many of you can attend. We're going to be talking about, again, the big challenges in the Balkans in relation to the bigger geopolitics as well. We're closing here. Ritsa Panagiotou, Niko Tsoufaki, thank you very much for your work and for your presentation.